This is an ABC podcast.
I've seen this movie before. That one ends in tears. I can tell you exactly what happened.
It's early days.
They don't get it and they don't seem to care.
I had senators and ministers in tears.
A government that is bitterly divided.
We've got to raise the standards of journalism a little bit here.
Hello and welcome to The Party Room. I'm Patricia Carvelis from RN Drive.
And I'm Fran Kelly from RN Breakfast.
So if you're listening to this wondering if things have maybe, you know, settled down since the leadership spill, well, I can reveal that they haven't. Fran, they really haven't. In fact, recriminations continue and I suppose a new fresh debate has started around bullying and intimidation, women's representation, very hot issues in the Liberal Party.
Well, that's true. And we'll hear some from Julie Bishop this morning because she's weighed in and she, you know, clearly the most senior and highly regarded woman within the Liberal Party up until she lost her job, that was, has weighed in, and that gives it a kick along. Not for want of trying on Scott Morrison's part, though, PK. I mean, he's giving a major speech. Headland speeches are back. Headland speeches were an invention of John Howard when he wanted to sort of flag where he stood on a number of value systems. He gave these headland speeches as he was trying to get the public to get to know him. Well, Scott Morrison is doing the same, and he's invoking the Menzies tradition, as they all love to. And he's going to be talking about healing the party by drawing everyone together over a set of beliefs that he's going to lay down in this headland speech. But his constant urging that the Liberal Party under his government is united, well, has really done nothing to make it true so far.
No. So this week I spoke with Liberal Party Senator Lucy Gachui. She's one of a number of female Liberal MPs who say they were bullied and intimidated by supporters of Peter Dutton during the leadership spill. But in fact, in Lucy Gachui's case, she talks about it being a longer problem during her pre-selection process, right back to June as well. So it's a bigger issue she's raised. She said Victorian MPs were given a particularly hard time, which backs up Victorian MP Julia Banks's statement when she announced she was quitting politics at the election, of course. Let's hear of some of the stuff that Lucy Gachui said in that interview with me.
They're holding a carrot, like this is your pre-selection. Hey, you do this, we do that. One senator had to be told that on your marking the ballot paper, you chose another senator just so that we can protect you, in quotes. What kind of workplace is that?
What kind of workplace is that? Good question, Senator Gachui. That kind of workplace is that, and that's what we're all looking at now. The whole nation is getting this sort of open window into how the Liberal Party operates at a pre-selection level, at a constituency level, and at the level within the colleagues in the parliament. And, some women are saying they don't like how it is. Even Julie Bishop has moved in on this, saying it's not good enough. And this notion that, you know, someone would be told that in a secret ballot they had to show their vote to others just so they could be spared retribution from Peter Dutton's supporters is fairly intimidating, isn't it? Just a little bit sinister. And the pressure's continuing on Julia Banks and others. Some are saying, well, you've got to name names. But as far as these women are concerned, that's just more of the bullying, this notion they've got to name names, and the fact that it's the suggestion it's just one or two or three people. I think their point is it's not just one or two or three people. It's the system and the way it operates, and it was operating in full force during that leadership spill 2 weeks ago, and that's led some significant female politicians to stand up and say no more.
Yeah, they are, and there's now quite a number of them. And then a number of others who are off the record. So if you look at that, that's actually quite a big number generally. And the part that's not talked about as much because it's not been front and centre, the very many men who agree with them and are also speaking. So it's not really just a gender issue. It's a bigger issue about culture and they're calling out the culture. I've had a few people say to me, and it's been said publicly too, you know, what's new about this? You know, this is the way politics works. You know, you show me your vote. Pre-selections have been threatened in history. This is not sort of a new invention. Couple of comments on this. Firstly, it was more intense. I definitely think it was more intense during this particular leadership battle. But I absolutely agree, having followed politics as you have, Fran, for a long time, that this is a cultural issue that's not sort of been invented overnight. What's different is that now people are saying we want our workplaces to reflect the other workplaces in Australia where this behaviour doesn't happen. So essentially it's almost a sort of movement against accepting this kind of culture in politics. You know,
it may
have happened in the past, but I suppose what's happening here is that there's a whole bunch of women, and I say men, who are saying, okay, it may be the way we operated in the past, but we don't want to operate like that anymore.
And part of the reason they can saying it is because how it's operated in the past hasn't delivered a diversified workplace. As Julie Bishop said in that speech at the Women of the Future Awards, which I was at, you know, it's not good enough that the Liberal Party has 25% women. Now, Julie Bishop and others for a long time have defended a merit-based system, have said, no, we don't want to follow the Labor Party and have quotas because that's not the way to go. We get there on merit. Now, really, what they're revealing to us is it's not just about merit. It's about the culture. It's about the sort of the gangs that exist and where the power exists. And I think you're right. This was more intense. And Lucy Kachui, when she spoke to you during the week, said part of that was the speed of it all. I mean, this was the most, you know, high speed, intense leadership change we've seen ever, I think. Just the speed of it really added to the passions running high. I've had one woman say to me that, you know, she had an MP within an inch of her face yelling at her, no, you can't vote that way. You know, it's not very pleasant. It's not very pleasant. And, you know, Julie Bishop weighed into this. Ultimately, she let the dust settle. And at that lunch, you know, she had a few things to say about the culture within a party.
I have seen and witnessed and experienced some appalling behaviour in Parliament. The kind of behaviour that 20 years ago, when I was the managing partner of a law firm of 200 employees, I would never have accepted. Yet, in Parliament, it's the norm.
Yet in Parliament, it's the norm. Now, of course, she's not the only voice. We also had this week the Minister for Women, Kelly O'Dwyer, saying that she was calling it out, and she had also seen this culture. So this is now quite a few people on the record saying this. And to be clear, Lucy Gachui, the South Australian senator who was put into that unwinnable spot on the Liberal ticket. So many people saying, oh, is this kind of sour grapes, recriminations? Well, you can jump to whatever conclusions you want about people's motive. But I think that she's being very honest about what she thinks she's witnessed. She's saying that she might reveal names using parliamentary privilege. And, of course, all eyes on whether that will happen. I know many people hope it won't. And I'm sure she's getting many calls right now, Lucy Kachui, hoping that she doesn't.
Sure she is.
She doesn't take that approach. But either way, whether she does or not, you know, she said on RN Drive that she might, but I can't be sure she will. But ultimately, this is not going to go away for Scott Morrison. And the bigger issue is on women's representation, on the Liberal Party kind of numbers, the fact that Julie Bishop says, you know, the rankings internationally are now fallen to 50th in the world for women's representation in Parliament. This is a bigger issue.
Below
it's
Afghanistan
a parallel
is
issue.
Worth reminding everybody, below yeah, Afghanistan.
Which really does speak volumes. Now, that's a parallel issue to the bullying and intimidation. But I think that there is a link between all of them, personally. And I think many people have observed it. Obviously, if you have more women in the parliament, not to say women have never been bullies. I mean, that is just ridiculous. Individuals can be bullies. But if you change the culture, then you can actually try and change a workplace. And at this stage, it doesn't even appear to be a particularly serious attempt at that. So there's that debate. It's absolutely overshadowing every single thing that Scott Morrison, the new Prime Minister, is trying to do. He's trying to, you know, get out there and connect with Australians and talk about policies that might actually resonate. But he just doesn't have any clear air, Fran, does he?
No, he doesn't. And look, if it looks to you like the Prime Minister is running around and looks like he's in election mode already, I think it's probably because he is. They've got a lot of ground to make up. And so far, there's been no measurable bounce from the change to a new leader. In fact, I'd say confusion exists still about why they changed, especially given we now know that all the announcements he's about to make were actually developed under Malcolm Turnbull. Of course, that's obvious. You can't get a whole raft of new policy up in 10 days. So it's a bit confusing. On the one hand, they're dressing up policies and saying, you know, this is our new direction. But everyone goes, well, hang on, that was direction that we were hinted at by Malcolm Turnbull, and now we have leaks that show, oh, yeah, they were rolling that out. They were getting to roll that out. So, you know, I think what we've got Scott Morrison trying to do now quickly, the best he can do in a quick time, is to try and get a better picture of himself out there as a leader with strong values and beliefs. He's doing a whole lot of value signalling at the moment. We might talk about that a little later. And we'll certainly get more of that value signalling in that headland speech in Albury that I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see those markers. And, you know, we're recording this on a Thursday morning. We won't be able to tell you all the markers, but we know broadly that they're going to get back to bread and butter issues in relation to the coalition and things that they see as strengths. Obviously, the economy is one of them. I mean, we've seen GDP figures out this week, Fran, which show that the economy is doing well. Yes, if you look under those, and that's the critique of Labor, there are issues. But, you know, those economic, the headline figure was a positive one for the government.
It must be killing Malcolm Turnbull, right, as he looks at the figures coming out. Hey, that was under me. Those GP figures were under my leadership. And he's still got the boot.
Yeah, he's got the boot. But he's in Manhattan, so I don't know. Maybe he's eating a bagel and having a better time.
Hey, don't you think
I wish I was eating a bagel right now.
Yeah, really. Why don't we bring in our guest? He loves bagels. Phil Khoury, Chief Political Correspondent with the Australian Financial Review. He's such a party guy.
Let's do it.
Phil Khoury, welcome back to the party room.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Phil, we've just been talking about Scott Morrison sort of looking and feeling like he's in campaign mode. He's got a string of promises coming out, which we'll talk about in a second. But he's also very quickly trying to get the public to know him and trying to signal he's different to Malcolm Turnbull. And I talked about the value signalling he's been doing and he's going to do in this major headland speech, including something he did this week. He retweeted a Daily Telegraph front page about gender whisperers. And you think, why is the Prime Minister bothering to retweet that? Because there's all sorts of arguments about, you know, what the Daily Telegraph story was about, but he just thought he'd retweet it. So I guess that's clearly signalling to the Conservatives that he's, you know, concerned about their concerns as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is the base, you know, talking to the base. These are the, you know, the issues that, you know, the Erica Betzes and the Kevin Andrews and the hardline Conservatives have been pushing, you know, the anti-gay marriage crowd. And I guess Morrison's just confirming, look, I'm one of you. I mean, he has to, you know, re-establish his bona fides with the Conservatives. He always has been. You know, he is socially conservative. He's a deeply religious guy. I mean, he's not confecting this, but he lost so much paint with that side of the party when he backed the Turnbull spill, you know, with his sort of passive role in the spill to get rid of Tony Abbott, that he's been in the doghouse with the Conservatives, you know, ever since. Now, he won the leadership not on the Conservative vote, but on the moderate vote.
Moderates going to be thinking about him retweeting these things, for instance?
Well, I haven't heard, but they're probably not that impressed. But at the end of the day, the moderates had a choice between Morrison and Dutton, and they'd rather Morrison than Dutton because Morrison's a more rounded person in terms of policy and personality and probably more electable. So I guess that's their concern at the moment. But, you know, Morrison, you know, I've been speaking to a lot of Conservatives who voted for Dutton in the last week or two. They're quite happy with Morrison. They say, look, we didn't pick him, but actually he's not bad. You know, he is one of us after all, and he's doing a pretty good job. So he seems to be ticking that box.
Okay, so he's ticking the base box, but you got to do
which is not a very big box.
No, that's where I'm going to. That you know, obviously you need to. I don't know. How do you win a general election? It has to go beyond your base. So let's talk about what he's trying to do, which is clear some of the barnacles, get them off, you know, the ship, so to speak. Abandoning plans, for instance, to raise the pension age, and a deal for Catholic schools, to name just a couple of those barnacles. But of course, he's been dealing with all these leaking at the same time. So we know that Malcolm Turnbull was moving towards these sorts of directions. I'm not sure, actually, just to be clear about the pension age one, but certainly the other ones. What's going on here, Phil?
Well, it's just Morrison just trying to get things back under control. You know, he quoted General Schwarzkopf and Storm and Norman the other day. He said, you know, he's inspired by what would he say when you put in charge, take charge, and that's what he's doing. So you're right.
Field Marshal Morrison.
Yeah, Storm and ScoMo. But all these things Turnbull was going to do, and Morrison was going to do too. He was in agreement, although I was told yesterday he opposed internally abandoning the pension age thing. That was about a year ago when they wanted to chuck it out in the 2016 budget with the rest of the zombie measures. Him and Cormann argued against that, but he's obviously since come around. But they were going to do this. They were going to do the company tax thing. They were going to, all the other, you know, they were going to patch up with the Catholic schools. They were going to announce all this infrastructure. All of this had been sort of either signed off or agreed to by cabinet or was, you know, in process. So he's just really announcing what Turnbull was going to announce anyhow, but I guess you get to announce it, you get to put your face on it. And, you know, one thing I think he is doing a bit better is his messaging is a lot clearer and sharper. He's more comfortable in his skin, you know, when he's out there mixing with the public. So you get to put your badge on these things. I remember when Kevin Rudd knocked off Kim Beazley in 2006, and you remember it was early December, and Rudd went on this big road tour, the listening tour, which we sort of quickly badged "He Talks, We Listen." But but he went around, you know, talking about climate change policy and ending the double drop off for childcare and all these sorts of things, and they were all actually Beazley's policies.
Yep.
Just no one had actually noticed Kim had announced them that much.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Because you could look at the GDP figures and go, wow, the economy's on track. You look at that story that David Crowe had, another leak about the party presentation after Longman and the polling saying, actually, it was our ground game. It's not the messaging. Don't worry too much. But then it does perhaps come down to the politics. I mean, you know, Malcolm Turnbull perhaps wasn't very good at clipping the message clearly so it punched through. You know, people say he raised expectations ahead of Longman. He raised the stakes ahead of Longman, for instance. That turned out to be a bad political move. So if that's all they get in the short term, longer term I'm sure it will change, but in the short term from a change of prime minister, how many of them will think that was worth it?
Well, I guess the polls will tell that, Fran, won't they? I mean, this is the ultimate test. I mean, we saw the initial opinion polls after the spill and they're in the toilet. You know, I think Morrison's got a period of grace. You know, people aren't going to expect them to recover immediately. But I, you know, will they still be so accepting of him or forgiving of him if they're still 4, 3, 5, you know, 5 points down, you know, in a couple of months' time? So he, as you said at the start, he hasn't got much time. He's got to sort of, people sort of pretty much know the guy. He's not an unknown figure, but, you know, he's been a very public face of the government for a long time. But at the same time, people want to get to know him personally and his values and all that sort of stuff. And he's got a very short time to try and do all of this. He's actually got to try and learn to be prime minister in the middle of it as well. It's not an easy job. It's a race against time really for Morrison on so many fronts. And and the trouble is a lot of it starts to look a bit forced or confected. I mean, he is a dag. This sort of, you know, daggy dad guy thing he does.
That's not pretend.
Yeah. Now that's
done.
Can I tell you a secret?
That's Richie Ditch. Tell us a secret. Yes.
I was hoping that was pretending.
No, I'm sure he was. But it was a long time ago. I think he was welfare minister or something. And I had a text message exchange with him about something. It was some innocuous thing we were trying to set up, like an interview or something like that. And I texted back, you know, thanks. That'll be cool or something like that. And he texted back, cowabunga. And I thought, whoever said cowabunga? So that's Morrison. He's actually sort of a fairly daggy bloke.
He's a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fan too. It's good to have some clarity around that. Okay, so Mr. Ordinary, all right, Average, that's what he's going for. Regular guy, you know, not big end of town.
He's the son of a copper. He grew up in the Shire, you know. I remember John Howard said, if you've got to understand Australia, you've got to understand the Shire. So he does have that ability to, he can converse with people about sport and things Turnbull couldn't do. You know, he doesn't feel uncomfortable in that environment. That's not put on, but at the same time, it looks like it can be a bit hokey.
It's a bit hokey. Okay, so he's trying to do all this, as you say, learn to be prime minister, announce all these policies, which are essentially, you know, pivoting away from previous difficult positions that the electorate had reacted very badly to. So sort of calibrating the message, but at the same time, dealing with what is really almost a bloodbath, if I can be really dramatic about it, but I think it is in relation to women, bullying, all of this. Julie Bishop, we've already talked about this, just Fran and I alone a little earlier on the podcast, in relation to what she said, the lack of respect, the low numbers of women in politics. Phil, this is actually not an easy thing for him to deal with at the same time as learning to be a prime minister and announcing policies that people might like.
No, that's right. But I think he started, at least his public utterances on the bullying thing have been correct. You know, there's a lot going on in Victoria. You know, the fallout from the spill and everything, the sort of the epicenter of all this. You know, the demotion of Michael Sukar from the ministry has not gone down well with the hard right. And the whole Julia Banks thing is sort of caught up with all that. You know, in terms of she and Sukar sort of fought a lot. You know, she felt threatened by that hard right faction down there.
Michael Kroger's sort of control of that faction seems to be an issue.
well, still thinks he's in control, but sort of is. He's still the spokesman for it. So it's all sort of the microcosm of all this nastiness is down in Victoria. And of course, Kelly O'Dwyer, stepped in, I thought, quite forcefully and well, and said, we're not going to cop this rubbish. And but now she's getting it in the neck down there for, you know, sort of siding with the bullying thing. And so it's pretty nasty down there. And Morrison, I think, has done the right thing. He sniffed the breeze on this, and he knows how bad it looks out there in the real world. And he sided with Kelly and the whip, Nola Marino. He said a few times, I'm talking to them, I'm listening to them, and we're gonna deal with this. Now, whether you can stamp this stuff out, I don't think you ever can, especially not in this combative workplace of Parliament House. But it's got to change. I mean, the rest of the world has changed.
And yeah, exactly.
As I said to you, Fran, on your show, politics is always the last to sort of catch up with where society's at. But Julie Bishop's made that clear. And the Liberal Party is lagging badly. They've got fewer than a quarter of their MPs are women. And it's just, you look at a cross-section of the Liberal MPs and it's not a cross-section of society, not even remotely. So Morrison, it could only be good for him to take this on. You know, for him to sort of run away from this would be terrible.
Yeah, that's right. But there's a few other barnacles. I just love that word. I just want to use it all the time. Barnacle, barnacle, barnacle. But there are some other issues that he still has to deal with, and that's all centering around his Home Affairs Minister, Peter Dutton, who was also, of course, not that long ago, in fact, you could count the days, his leadership rival. Now, he's dealing with this au pairs inquiry and issues that are coming up over that. And also, as you've been reporting, Phil, a High Court issue, whether he is referred to the High Court over his Section 44 concerns. Talk to me about that. Peter Dutton, I mean, the issues around him, how is this going to work itself out next week when Parliament's back?
I don't think it will. I think it'll plague him all the way to the next election unless there's some numerical miracle in the Parliament and Labor gets the numbers to refer him. It just goes to this section of the Constitution where you can't have a pecuniary interest, direct or indirect. He's got a couple of childcare centres that are held in trust. You know, he's done the right thing with all that to try and keep it all at arm's length. But what's emerged just really in the last few days was this letter that was sent by an agency on behalf of the government to one of Mr. Dutton's childcare centres. Yeah, they'd applied for funding from the government for a teacher to look after a kid who's got autism. They needed a special needs teacher, and the letter approved the funding. Congratulations, pleased to announce you've got your funding, and it specifically uses the wording "you have a funding agreement with the Commonwealth." Right, it uses that language, which is sort of the same language in Section 44.5.
Yeah, of the Constitution.
If you've got one of those, you can't. Now it's a very sort of, you know, harmless sort of thing. I mean, they're getting in a teacher to help a kid with autism. But as we've seen with the High Court, they don't care about sentimentality. If you're in breach, you're in breach. Their previous interpretations of Section 44.1 have been black letter. You know, we don't care whether you thought you were Australian or your dad wore a hat with corks in it and joined the army. You know, you're in breach, buddy. Off you go. So the emergency of this letter, it was put in the legal brief that was given to Stephen Donohue, the QC, who had like 24 hours to furnish an opinion on Dutton's eligibility as part of that leadership spill stuff. And now people are just starting to notice this letter and this thing. And surprise, surprise, lawyers are divided over it. Donohue sort of, he was of the view that, look, if all the money for this teacher was spent on the teacher, then no profit went to the Duttons through their trust. So therefore, I don't think he has a pecuniary interest. So that was his sort of prima facie assessment, but he said, I'm not in possession of all the facts, so I can't give you a final thing. But Anne Toomey, George Williams, a bunch of others say, look, it has to be tested. You know, it uses the word agreement. It has to be tested by the High Court.
But so how does that happen? How does this cloud get dissipated over Peter Dutton? If Labor doesn't have the numbers to refer, the government's not going to do it. So does that cloud under Section 44 just stay hanging over Peter Dutton, a bit like the au pairs thing, isn't it? I mean, it seems as though he's in no breach of the laws here, but we had that Senate inquiry looking into the au pair affair. It's turned up a couple of other things, but really he hasn't done anything illegal. How does he get out from under these things, or does it just become impossible for Labor or whoever else wants to keep it going, You know, what does this do to Peter Dutton and, for instance, future leadership ambitions?
Well, you've got to remember he's sitting on a marginal seat already, which is under threat. And I think you'll find if you talk to people in Labor, even if they can't get the numbers, if they got all the crossbenchers and Emma Hussar came back from her leave, That'd be 70. It'd be 74-74. So a tie wouldn't be able to refer him. So you might need someone, one of the Liberals, to disappear in the toilet or, you know, go to the airport early. If that doesn't happen, which, you know, if they can't get the numbers, then I think you'll find Labor will be quite happy just to bang this drum about this fellow's eligibility from over the next 6 months, and which could be enough, you know, to finish him off in his seat. So either way, Labor, I think, sees this as a win.
While this is all happening, of course, we're about to get into by-election territory in the seat of Wentworth. Christine Forster has now pulled out of that. She's Tony Abbott's sister, for anyone who doesn't remember, but also, you know, kind of she was in the same-sex marriage campaign advocating for a yes vote. And there's a host of others running, like there's Andrew Bragg, also in the actual same-sex marriage campaign, David Sharma, who was a Israeli ambassador for Australia, Mary Lou Jarvis, Michael Fennelly. I mean, all these people kind of putting their hands up. And we know that Alex, who is Alex Turnbull, this is Malcolm Turnbull's son, has, you know, basically on Twitter suggested maybe people should maybe donate to Labor. Isn't that what he pretty much said, Phil?
Yeah, he did say that. And there's also maybe Karen Phelps might put a hand up. She'd be a very high profile independent, you'd have to think, pretty high impact in that particular seat. What happens to Wentworth? How does this play out?
Well, don't you love Wentworth? I mean, this will be the best one since the 2007. Remember when Turnbull went against George Newhouse and that just turned into the sort of the great subplot of the election campaign. Look, I don't live there, but people I know who do say the anger is what. I was just actually speaking to somebody before I came in to talk to you guys, who said they've got their baseball bats out in Wentworth for the coalition. So there's so much anger because remember it wasn't never really a mega safe seat. It was only when Turnbull was so popular, you know, so much of that 17% margin was a personal margin. Mm. Yeah, it's never been at risk of Labor, but you'd have to think if Karen Phelps ran and, you know, Labor's running, making sort of half an effort there, and you've got so many, you know, so many other sort of candidates are sticking their hands up and preferences go every which way and there's a big protest vote, you know, Phelps could end up taking that seat, at least in a by-election. One of the theories is why it's taking so long to announce a date. Seriously, we're going to end up with another 8-week campaign for Wentworth. This is, you know, have you noticed they had to sort of call it early this week to have it on the 6th of October and they haven't, which now pushes it past school holidays and sitting weeks of Parliament. So we're in for another one of these moronically long campaigns. But one of the theories, and it's only a theory, is that they're hoping that the longer the campaign, then the anger will abate somewhat in Wentworth and people will calm down a bit. That's one of the theories behind why we haven't heard yet when the date will be. But you know,
God, that's Machiavellian, isn't it?
Well,
and
but
it's also,
but also might backfire. You know,
yeah, that totally. Give people more time. I don't know how other people's anger works, but mine simmers away.
Well, you saw what a genius move it was to have a 9-week campaign for Longman and Braddon. I mean, and I believe this. I mean, a lot of spin gets thrown around this place, but Labor and the Liberals have confirmed this to me. They reckon if that had been a normal campaign 5 or 6 weeks, they would have lost those seats. It took them a good 7 or 8 weeks to get ahead. So you just think they want to get over and done with in Wentworth, wouldn't you?
Put people
the
out
sooner
of
they
misery.
Put all this behind them and get people thinking forward to a general election, the better. I think that would be the clear strategy. Phil Khoury, you're amazing. Thank you so much for joining us.
See you, Phil.
You're welcome. See you, guys.
Okay, PK, it's time for trading preferences. What have you got?
Well, look, Malcolm Turnbull is no longer the Prime Minister. Everyone knows that. We've had a few Party Room episodes talking all about that change, that significant change. He left Australia and went to New York. Who wouldn't want to go? You start spreading the news, you have a nice time. But there's been a little, well, he's been papped. He's been paparazzied, you know, because he's the former Prime Minister and he's kind of skipped the country. And of course, there's still media interest in what he's doing. And he was snapped with his organic bag of groceries, walking with Lucy Turnbull, his wife, with the headline, Manhattan Meltdown, because he wasn't very happy about being followed around. His view is, you know, I'm a private citizen now, I'm gone, leave me alone. In fact, there were reports that he even got his iPhone out and took footage. I haven't verified those, to be clear. But either way, it they couldn't have found a more unappealing picture of the two. They looked grumpy and
miserable. They were
miserable.
Grumpy by the sounds of it. Well,
they
why
did.
Wouldn't they be grumpy?
Yeah. Well,
why wouldn't he be grumpy?
I suppose it's a whole other debate about whether he should be followed. Like, I can understand the journalistic interest in wanting to get a picture of the former Prime Minister who just resigned. I mean, you know, it is all very fresh. Yeah, I can also understand as a private citizen his interest in wanting to get on with his life and be left alone.
Especially since one of his parting shots was that News Corp was part of the reason for the bringing down of a prime minister, and here's News Corp journalists traipsing around after him in Manhattan. I mean, you can't kind of understand the frustration.
I could get the frustration, but I do understand the media interest as well. I don't know, like I'm sitting here on the fence here going, I kind of get both sides.
No,
but either
know.
Way, I do, I actually do.
Let the guy get out of town.
Well, he just quit though, Fran. I mean, he just quit. He just skipped town. So there's like, it's not like it's a year later and he's being harassed. It's just, this is fresh stuff. But either way, Manhattan meltdown,
yeah, but let's
a great
think about
alliteration,
that for
a great alliteration. Come on.
It is great alliteration, but let's think about that. Why is there news value in seeing him walking around Manhattan in a T-shirt? What is the news value of that? We knew he got on the plane because we got those photos of him getting on the plane.
I don't know. We can find out what kind of organic goods he likes.
I rest my case.
It's trading preference time. I don't know. I just want to know what kind of fancy apples he buys, because I buy fancy apples sometimes and they are very expensive. Fran, what's your trading preference?
Well, my trading preferences goes back to that lunch that I was at. I mentioned earlier the Women's Weekly Lunch for Women of the Future Awards, and Julie Bishop was the speaker. It was the first time she's put her head up since she's got knocked off. She didn't get elected as leader, and then she went to the back bench, so she's no longer our foreign minister, so the country loses that way, that's for sure. And she had messages about the whole issue of treatment of women and men, issues of bullying and intimidation in the party. And the one thing that's really, really, really annoyed me about this whole debate, since Julia Banks in particular stood up and said she was going to quit because of it, is the response. I mean, Craig Kelly, a Liberal MP, said you've got to roll with the punches in this business. We had Alan Jones, a broadcaster, saying, look, it's time to swallow a spoon of cement and toughen up. I mean, I just hate that kind of response, and I think it breeds trouble. Turns out, Julie Bishop didn't like it either.
When a feisty, amazing woman like Julia Banks says, this environment is not for me, don't say, toughen up, princess. Say, enough is enough.
Right on, sister.
Mic drop moment. Julie Bishop just hasn't missed with that speech. And the thing about her truth bombs, I just want to address this, is there's a lot of critique. Why didn't she say this earlier? Well, actually, you know, of course, when you're part of a team, your messages on this stuff are a bit more nuanced, aren't they? Because you have to participate. She's now a backbencher. She doesn't have that restriction anymore. She can just call it out as she wants to. And also this sort of parallel debate about she doesn't call herself a feminist. I don't care what she calls herself. Who cares?
I care. I actually do care about
that. Oh, I love it when we have a fight on air. I don't care if she calls herself feminist, because she's talking about the same principles, which
language
is equality.
Language is very important. And in my mind, if you act like a feminist, walk like a feminist, you should call yourself a feminist. Own it. I think it's important. But having said that, she was addressing a room of young women, giving a message to them. So it was entirely appropriate that she spoke forcefully about this stuff to that audience. It was the perfect audience, I think, for this message.
Well, either way, she's certainly done it. She's shared the view. She's talked essentially about equality, which I think a lot of people in this country would support and want to see reflected in the parliament, whether she uses the F word or not. She's talking about the same stuff, I reckon. All right, that's it. Time for us to say goodbye. You can email us anytime, send us your thoughts, thepartyroom@abc.net.au, or tweet us using the hashtag thepartyroom. And also do us a favour, tell your friends about us, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really does help other people find us.
And if the party room just isn't enough PK and FK for you, you can find us weekdays, breakfast and drive, on RN. PK on RN Drive, I'm on RN Breakfast, 6 in the morning, 6 at night.
And if you like The Party Room, you might want to check out another ABC podcast, Background Briefing. This week, they investigate Australia's conflicting laws around late-term abortion and what it means for the women caught in the middle. Check it out on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. I promise you Background Briefing is worth subscribing to.
Absolutely. Next week's going to be a huge one in the Parliament, PK. See ya.
See you later.